there's a lot of hate going on. You pop a cherry with an orgy and it's all good.
Really, really talented, handsome young man.
Don't walk in here with a giant banana and think everything's going to be peaches.
Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Monday, February 7th, 2011. I'm your host, Adam Berry, and joining me today, two recruiting writers with Elite Measurables. We got Tom Green.
Good to be back, guys.
And joining us, special guest from the Gainesville Sun, Ed Ashoff.
What's going on?
Thanks for being here with us, Ed, taking time away from your extensive recruiting database.
Thank God.
You want to go ahead and plug where people can find you online?
Gatorsports.com and then recruits.gatorsports.com, our new awesome recruiting website. Profiles, we had 2011 uncommitted guys that are interested in Florida. I said profiles already. All my blogs, videos,
everything.
It's crazy.
Yeah, very impressive stuff.
No star system yet because I don't rank people. Will Muschamp. I don't rank. I don't do stars.
Is that coming?
Well, he took a shot at the guys who
Have you seen the guys that rank them?
Yeah. And then everybody looked at me and I don't rank them. That's not my job, so I want to make that clear. That's not what I do.
All right, that's fair. And you can check us, send any feedback to us at podcast@alligator.org. Obviously, got two recruiting guys in the studio today. We're going to talk a lot of recruiting. National Signing Day was last Wednesday. The Gators signed 18 commits on National Signing Day, just picked up a 19th this weekend. Let's get your overall thoughts from both of you on the Will Muschamp's first class as a whole. Somebody jump in.
I'll go first. I think it's a solid first class. It's always tough transition year. Urban Meyer was one of the best in the game, so he builds relationships years in advance. I mean, he knows these kids when they're, you know, first learning algebra, and that's something Will Muschamp just couldn't get a jump on. It's impossible.
Right.
I also think it was kind of difficult for him to come in from the Texas region. If he takes the LSU job, there's not really a drop-off. He's recruited all those guys, but when you're stepping into Florida's recruiting area, it's definitely tougher. Guys in South Florida might know who Will Muschamp is, but they don't really know him.
Right.
So when he was at Auburn and LSU, he obviously developed a lot of good relationships with the Southeastern coaches, and he said that. And he said, yeah, you know, I have relationships here, but it's different when you have relationships with coaches and when you have relationships with players.
Right.
So I don't think that his name was big enough, really, for a lot of those guys to say, oh, man, Will Muschamp. So, you know, I thought he struggled down the stretch, defensive guys. Graham Stewart, he's undersized. Saw him in that All-Star game, and it was tough to watch. So we'll see. But I mean, you can never really tell with some of these guys. So he could have the biggest heart in the world and come out and just play like, you know, Brandon Seiler,
right,
or someone like that. So I still think they missed in the linebacker spot. They missed on defensive line. They missed on offensive line. They only got two guys.
Right.
So those are major holes that weren't filled. So we'll just see what happens, you know, next year. But I thought that defensively he'd do a lot better than he did. Obviously, he brought in a great defensive back class. Definitely headlined by Marcus Roberson. He could play safety. He's a great corner, but I think he's built for safety. That's where his instincts are. That's what he looked like at the Under Armour game and all the practices. So, and he even said that, you know, he knows he's going to turn into a safety, but he wants to get a shot at corner. So that's good for Florida. They need some corner help.
Right.
But, you know, the Luche Purifoy, I think, is their most athletic guy that they got in this class altogether. So we could see him in the return game. We'll definitely see him at corner. I don't think they really have a true corner outside of Roberson yet. They're all athletes. They all played, you know, running back, wide receiver, quarterback, all that stuff. So we'll see. Valdez Showers is another guy who's really athletic. Maybe he won't be a returner, but we'll definitely see him, you know, with the cornerback spot in a couple years. So, and then Driscoll, the headliner, number one quarterback in the country. He's a gambler at times, but, you know, learning under Charlie Weiss is definitely going to help him. So, right. You know, solid first class. He kept the core together. He did lose some guys. I still think that Wason was a huge miss for Florida and him going to Florida State. So it's still relatively good for his first one. I'd rank him probably B-minus, just because I thought he'd do much better getting defensive guys,
right.
And they didn't really close strong on the defensive front. Tevin Westbrook, we don't really know a lot about him. And to lose Elkino Watson to South Florida, I think that's a big hit.
Yeah, to USF of all places,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, exactly. You know, to lose him to Miami, okay, he grew up a Miami fan, but, right. You know, I've been told that Florida thought they had him. They were expecting that fax to come in, and then all of a sudden they hear USF, and everyone's kind of shocked. So
USF has pumped out a few good defensive linemen over the last few years, though. So
maybe
a good future there.
Yeah, but when you look at it, do I want to go to Miami, Florida, or USF?
Right.
Then, yeah. and that's no disrespect really to USF, but as a football school.
Yeah. Just in terms of exposure and what you can
Florida
get.
Florida is definitely above all those. So when it came down to those three, I was really surprised the South Florida guy. But that's a huge pickup for the Bulls.
Definitely. Another guy they whiffed on sort of in the last 2 weeks, Tom, you can talk about this, is Timmy Jernigan, defensive tackle out of pretty much Florida's backyard.
Yeah, just up the road, 35 miles up the road up in Lake City. one of the top defensive tackles in the class this year. And he was really affected when Urban Meyer left. He felt betrayed by it because...
So asinine, by the way. We'll go ahead.
Yeah. Because he was saying, like, just a few days before Urban left and Dan McCartney left, they were in his house talking to him, building relationships with him. The next thing he knows, they're both gone. Mm-hmm. And he said he wanted to give Muschamp and his staff a chance, you know. He didn't want to, like, count them out. But in the end, he just felt betrayed, and he had a good relationship with Florida State's coaches and thought he'd end up doing well there.
Let's talk about the betrayal thing, because this is something that came up. I was down in Brooksville, Nature Coast, for Juwan Store and his signing. He ended up coming to Florida, but he dropped the betrayed line as well. It's like, is that really betrayal? Like, I understand that these coaches are lying to these players, you know, at their, you know, right out one side of their mouths and telling them that, you know, they want to die coaching them on the sidelines or whatever the line was Urban dropped
last
year.
Which Urban might have.
Right. Had he continued, yeah, it's a strong possibility. Is there any grounds for that, just from your opinion, like feeling betrayed? Like, I understand feeling hurt, but dropping words like betrayed over a coach doing his job or leaving his job, like, it's still all in the game, right? Like,
I think it depends. In this situation, it's a health – I mean, it's definitely a health concern for Urban.
Right.
He literally could have died on the sideline. So I
but
think
if he did,
that,
he wanted to do it coaching them.
Well, then, you know, John Story's got to feel good about that. But I think that it's – betrayed is such a strong word. And I know that, you know, Craig Howard told me that Jernigan was really upset and that he hated the fact that 3 days before Dan McCartney takes the job, there's no discussion of it. And I think that's where they get a little upset, when there's no – When they don't say, hey, there's a chance that I might take this, there's a chance that this might happen, that's when they get upset. I think that with Story, he had no idea it was happening. And Jernigan didn't either. And I think that they were, you know, they're definitely hurt. But betrayed, it's different if Urban says, hey, Tim, come to Florida. I'm going to coach you for 5 years. I'm never going to leave.
Right.
There's nothing else I want to do with my life. I don't want to go somewhere else. And then 2 days later, he takes a Notre Dame job.
Right.
Health reasons. That's where it's a little iffy. I can't. You know, it's unless Urban said, oh, I'm perfectly healthy. You know, I'm never going to get sick ever again in my life.
Yeah.
There's no chance. Then I think the betrayed's too strong of a word. But you know, these kids, They think they build these strong relationships with these coaches, and I'm sure they do, but you have to think about it. Next year, these coaches are building the same relationships with other guys. So, yeah. I mean, it's a business.
I was a little shocked that Jernigan dropped the betrayed line, just because he sounded like a kid that understood the recruiting game. He was saying, oh, all these coaches, you know, they tell everybody that, you know, you're going to see the field your freshman year.
Right.
He's like, that's just part of the game, though. This is the exact same thing. It's part of the game.
Right.
These coaches are willing to do whatever it takes to get you on campus.
Right. Yeah, but I just thought that was a huge theme, seemingly, of at least the stuff I followed on National Signing Day, was people talking about the Meyer and how that affected – how much did that affect the class in terms of what was established beforehand and what ended up as Florida's
I think it affected it greatly. Yeah. I mean, if Meyer doesn't leave, I think they get Curtis Grant, they get Lamar Dawson. They might even get Stephone Anthony.
They keep Waysom.
Yeah, they keep Waysom. They keep Shazer. They keep Poundshell.
Maybe even Pagan. I know he decommitted before Urban left.
That was he decommitted after McCartney left, so that was always wishy-washy. Right. You could never really tell. But maybe they have a better shot at him. I mean, he at least visits.
Right.
I think he at least visits. And then once you visit, everything changes.
Yeah.
But they have three solid linebackers. They might even have a shot at Tim Jernigan. They definitely at least get to go after other defensive tackles.
Yeah.
Delvin Simmons was a guy that they looked at late, but maybe if Meyer's there, something changes. So I think that, you know, they missed on a lot of guys when they lost Meyer. But at the same time, I don't think that you know, Kelvin Benjamin shows any more interest in Florida because there's no offensive changes. Jamari Erasco is not a guy that's on Florida's board, so maybe they don't get, you know, any defensive end look. They might not go after Graham Stewart. They might not go after Tevin Westbrook. So, you know, it's we'll never really know how the class would have shaped up, but I still think it would have been a better class
because yeah.
I mean, they keep everyone they have. So, you know, maybe even Shazier. When I talked to him, he said that he was kind of iffy on his decision before Meyer quit. So maybe he's a guy who at the last second switches over to Ohio State before he enrolls early. So that was always something that might have been up in the air. But, I mean, they get closer to 25 with Meyer still there.
Right. What's what are the rankings right now of this class? What's this class being? What's it being put at, like, top 15, top 20?
15, but that was before Brissett signed his letter of intent, so that could boost them a couple spots.
Are they 12 in ESPN?
They're like 20th 4 on now. Signing day for ESPN, which was
unbelievable.
And then
they dropped to like 10th or 11th,
despite
something like that.
Signing people that they didn't expect to and then not, you know, missing really on anybody except for the guy who signed with USF. What do you feel of that ranking? I mean, obviously that's hard to judge in any way, but
I think it's always tough because they always rank so differently. I mean, Timmy Jernigan's a 5-star with one recruiting site. He's a 4-star on the other. Florida's 4th with ESPN, you know, the night before signing day, then they dropped to 12. It's crazy. I would say personally they're probably 15 to 20 range.
Okay.
The Brissett signing definitely helps. But, you know, when you miss I think grades should not just be on, you know, the star rankings and all that and, you know, the rating of 88 or whatever ESPN does. On it. It should be like needs.
Filling
and they
needs,
definitely
yeah.
missed on a lot of needs. Right. So I would say 15 to 20 range.
All right, I'd agree with that. Tom, you got it?
Yeah, probably about the same spot. Like Ed said, they needed some linebackers in that class. They needed some more help on the defensive line and another offensive lineman, getting only two guys, especially two guys that didn't enroll early. It helps so much for offensive linemen to enroll early.
Like stuck in the weight room working out.
They need to get in the weight room. They need to get the size. They need to get used to the college level because the difference between offensive line at high school and college is just such
gross.
A huge jump.
Let's talk about some of the guys more specifically. The most recent one, Brissett. Tom, you were down there for his interesting, I guess you could say, announcement and the way he went about it. Can you talk about how that happened and then sort of the recent controversy and then we can get to today's news?
Brissett decided on Thursday what school he was going to go to. He was, like, really conflicted about it, didn't know if he wanted to go to Florida or Miami. Wisconsin and Washington were also in it, but at the end it came down to Florida and Miami, really. Which is weird, because they're the ones that recruited him last. Like, neither school was really interested in him until a coaching change.
Huh.
I think
distance might have played a factor.
Yeah, that too. Okay. Definitely. but he decided on Thursday, but waited to announce until Friday before his basketball game.
That he was playing.
He's a 2-sport star, point guard and quarterback. And it was senior night, so they introduced all their seniors, and he was the last one to come out. Came out with his mom on his side, gave her flowers, and then announced in front of the whole packed gym that he was going to go to Florida, which his mom was not fond of at the time.
Right. And then what was the thing? He told his mom 2 hours before he the announcement in a text message?
Yeah, he decided on Thursday but didn't tell his mom until about 5 o'clock Friday afternoon.
Unbelievable.
Like, not even over the phone, not even in person.
Right.
Sent her a text.
Great. And then obviously mom was not – mom Brissett was no
– No, she was.
Now
like
I know that
his
text
this.
Messages work.
Right.
So all those text messages I've sent him and haven't gotten back, right. it's not getting them. Okay. Good to know.
Right, he's too busy texting his mom all the important information.
Maybe only has outgoing texts.
There you go. Anyway, mom obviously was not pleased about this. She wanted him to go to Miami.
Yeah, she was pushing Miami. She felt disrespected by Florida because she never got to meet Will Muschamp in person. She got to meet Al Golden in person. She liked Charlie Weiss, though. She said she sees eye to eye with Charlie Weiss.
Huh.
But she felt disrespected that Muschamp never met her in person.
All right, I mean, whatever Meyer Brissett wants, I suppose. And then, Ed, you were telling us just when you walked in here.
He sent his letter of intent in, so he's he's going to Florida.
I bet he texted his mom right after they sent
Well, apparently she
came around.
She came around over the weekend. But, you know, I was told Saturday that, you know, Muschamp didn't have a chance to make that in-home because with the contact period, you know, Brissett, well, he was in San Antonio. when Muschamp made the visit down to Dwyer. And
to
once
see
you go to
Kurt Magid.
Yeah, and he wanted a defensive end, so he wanted Kurt Magid, who everyone thought was going to go to Florida until Tuesday, of course. It's recruiting. How silly of us to think that kid's going to go to a school. But, yeah, so he goes to Dwyer. He can't make that in-home because, you know.
You got
to
make the in-school and the
exactly,
in-home the same day.
Exactly, yeah. Same day, so can't make it back down. You can only contact him, you know, emails and phone calls and text. Well, I can't text anymore, but but the thing was, is they said, hey, if you ever want to come to Gainesville, come to Gainesville.
And she
said no.
Right, so Will Muschamp should be disrespected by Mama Brissette.
Yeah.
That's what we're saying here.
But I'm sure that relationship will
it'll
be mended. Yeah, well, it depends on what happens with him and Jeff Driscoll.
Definitely. And let's talk about that, actually. Driscoll, Muschamp apparently said at the press conference on signing day, every position's an open battle, whatever. Mm-hmm. But there's some reason to believe quarterback might actually be an open position battle. How do you see that shaking out between Driscoll, Brissette, Brantley, and all the other fullback tight end quarterbacks they got on the roster?
I think that, you know, Brantley's the guy. He's going to be the guy until he graduates. And everyone's just got to face it. And I think it'll be different. He'll definitely have his confidence boosted this spring, playing in a pro style. It'll be way more comfortable. But, you know, I've been told that this staff isn't looking to get on its knees and, you know, beg Brantley to be better.
Mm-hmm.
If he starts messing up, they're not going to be afraid to go the next guy. And I find it hard to believe that Driscoll's not the next guy.
Yeah, right. Especially he's going to have a leg up on Brissette since he enrolled in January.
And even if he's competing with Jordan Reed and Tyler Murphy, you know, we don't know what Tyler Murphy can do. We know what Jordan Reed can do, but obviously when Trey Burton's calling plays for you in the offense, you know, you might not be so keen on what's going on. And it's not that he's not a good quarterback. He looked really good last year.
Definitely.
But it's got to be tough when he can't relay the plays in when, you know, Trey Burton has to do that. It looks like he's playing safety.
Right.
So
when Trey Burton's calling plays for you in Steve Adazio's offense, too, I can't imagine Jordan Reed being handed Charlie Weiss's playbook. Like, figure this out, you know.
Plus, I think he's better suited to play tight end.
Definitely, yeah.
Or be that wildcat quarterback.
Right.
Because Even if he's playing tight end and then he lines up a quarterback, he's still got that threat that he can throw and run.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he's going to be a special player in the offense if he can figure out his packages and then play tight end.
Right.
Yeah. Muschamp was saying on Wednesday that Jordan Reed's going to remain an intricate part of the offense.
Yeah, and he should.
Yeah.
He's a
just
beast.
A matter of where he ends up.
I mean, he's very athletic. So, yeah, I think Trey Burton's out of the equation. He might be a package guy, but we have never seen him really throw.
Yeah.
We don't know what Tyler Murphy's going to do. So I think it's going to come down to, you know, Driscoll. And Brissette's going to push him, but the real battle is next year with Brissette and Driscoll. So that's when it'll get really interesting.
Let's talk about Driscoll, I guess. What impact do you see him making right away? What kind of year do you see him having in his freshman year? Is he a Tebow type his freshman year where he comes in very rarely, or could he legitimately make a push? Or does Brantley have to really, really, really suck, I'll put it that way, for Driscoll to see the field? Or is there a legitimate chance that Driscoll can just win that battle by pure talent alone?
Define really suck. Like,
I mean,
a season
John
like last
Brantley
year.
Last year, yeah.
Well, John Brantley starts out like he did last year. I think a few games into the season, you're going to start seeing Driscoll more.
Okay, because I think the pressure is going to be outrageous to get a guy like that on the field. So I'm curious to see how that shakes out. Let's talk about some of the other offensive guys. Mike Blakely, running back. He's pretty much already out of the equation. He had surgery.
Mm-hmm. Surgery last Monday Monday
last
before.
Week.
Yeah. Which is a huge blow because he can play in the slot. He can play running back. He's a strong guy.
He's small, but yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't play like he's a scat back. He doesn't dance around. He'll dance around once he gets out of the, you know, past the line of scrimmage, but that's what I really like about him. He's a downhill runner, if you will, as a small guy.
Right.
So that's he's exciting to watch. So I think that's a huge blow for the spring.
Do you think he would have played, though? Because they're still sitting on Mac Brown, and isn't he kind of supposed to be similar?
Yeah, but the threat of him being a slot guy, because he has such good hands.
Okay.
He's someone – I don't know if he would have played extensively this fall, but, I mean, it still would have helped the offense if he got in the spring. Now he's – you know, he's got to wait, and the thing that's going to hurt him is now he probably can't lift. So his legs might be stronger, but we'll see what his upper body can do.
Definitely. What other offensive guys? What are the skill position guys?
A.C. Leonard.
A.C. Leonard.
Tight end.
Definitely.
That was a big get for them. I like A.C. Leonard. He's got good hands. At Friday Night Lights, he was probably the best one there.
Yeah, and I mean, he's athletic as hell. He can. Watching him in Under Armour practices was just.
Yeah.
It was unfair for the linebackers. They couldn't keep up with him. And then, you know, corners were too small. So I think he's – and the tight end position's wide open now. You know, it's Jordan Reed, Gerald Christian, and A.C. Leonard. Yeah, right. They have Desmond Parks. They have Mike McFarland.
Desmond Parks still kicking around.
I mean, a wrist injury has really hurt Desmond Parks. Size is a problem for Mike McFarland. So who knows who's going to play tight end. If they do two tight ends,
I probably wouldn't be surprised
if A.C. Leonard was a guy that they used a lot. I mean, I don't want to compare him to Aaron Hernandez, but I mean, he's athletic like that. He can run. He can catch. So I think it'd be great if if Gerald Christian can come along as the tight end,
right?
Then that's a great compliment to him, A.C. Leonard.
Okay. What are the guys we got a skill position to talk about?
Juwan Story.
I'll do a little talking about him, as a matter of fact. I was down there on Wednesday in Brooksville for his signing. And this is – I was going to save this for later, but I'll just say it now. Anybody who said they could tell you where Juwan Story was signing before that day, before that moment, is lying to you. And I don't care if either one of you said it. I'll say that. That kid – and I was there with Kyle, who was on the podcast a couple weeks ago. And we said you could look in that kid's eyes and you could see a high school senior – about to make a profoundly confused by the most important decision in his life. That kid had no idea whether he was going to Ohio State or Florida. And then he sat down. He chose Florida, and we talked to him and his uncle afterward. And it was actually Kyle and I talked to his on again, off again girlfriend, as she was described to us. And yeah, that's a story in its own right. But she said, like, called him at 3:30 the night before, saying he had no idea where he was going. The uncle and him stayed up all night talking because he had no idea where he was going. Yeah, and then the kid, yeah, and this is a 9 a.m. signing. Yeah. He sits down just nervous as all hell, sitting back and forth, you know, rocking back and forth, pacing around, and he finally signs with Florida, and you could just see that visible sense of relief. And I saw him a little bit when I was down in Tampa covering preps for the Times, and he's a very good player, very athletic. Didn't see him a whole lot at receiver, but I think he's a guy who can come in and eventually make a difference. I don't think he's going to be a big threat year one just because Florida is pretty deep at receiver.
Yeah, I've seen him a few times. Back in the fall, I went down to Tavares to see him play. That game got rained out at the half, but he was playing quarterback for his team. You could tell he's really athletic. He's got speed. He's got size. It's just how well is he going to transition back into wide receiver? Saw some of it at the Under Armour game. He's raw. He's got raw talent, and he just needs to develop more.
Yeah, I mean he's a kid that played receiver who switched to quarterback. And you're definitely going to lose a little bit. But I remember talking to him earlier in the year, and he said that that's probably the best thing that's going to help him as far as developing back into a receiver is that he's going to know routes. You know, he's going to know what to do.
Hmm.
But you could definitely tell during practices in Orlando that, you know, he was sloppy. It was tough for him to come out of his routes, have clean routes. So, I mean, that's going to take time.
He's got great hands.
And he can go up and get
Yeah, he's 6'4".
He's perfect for the offense because he's fast and – you know, he can obviously catch over pretty much any corner.
Yeah. When we were talking to Driscoll after Under Armour practice, he was like, yeah, man, thing I like about Juwan, I could just throw it up there. He's going to grab it.
Yeah, and that's huge. In Florida, I mean, they haven't really had much of that. They've spread guys. And,
right. You
know, he's a faster Dallas Baker.
Wow.
So maybe if his work ethic is like Dallas Baker, then that'd be huge. Because
that's
something that Florida, I mean, Florida's missed that in their offense. They don't have that tall guy. Carl Moore didn't really pan out.
Except on third downs.
Yeah, apparently. Yeah, last year,
machine. Yeah, and that fizzled out.
Right.
You know, halfway through the season. Yeah. So, you know, I think it's a huge get. I think it'll take him a couple of years, though. Kind of like Javaris McCroy. He's a slot guy who's going to, you know, definitely spread the field with you, but still going to take a little bit to develop, especially with the pro style.
Right.
Definitely more suited for the spread.
I think McCroy will see some time at special teams this year.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's fastest guys are going to play. Yeah.
Right. So. Florida is still fairly deep at receiver, though, to the point where it's like, remember Stephen Ali? Like, isn't he still, you know, he's exactly. Still kicking around.
Maybe he'll be that
That's what I'm saying. He's that tall, fast.
4'4", 40 with 6'6", so.
I mean, he's still on the team.
And a Harvard brain.
Yeah. Brilliant. Canadian education or
boring
something.
Boring tweets, though. Very boring.
I didn't even know he was on Twitter, to be honest with you.
I expect better from you, Steve.
Aren't they all on Twitter at this point?
That's true.
Stephen Ali. God, why did I say Ali? It's a pet peeve of mine.
Yeah, not bad. Who else we got skill position-wise to talk about on the offensive end? Is that?
You could say Hunter Joyer.
Oh, yeah. Tom wants to talk about Hunter Joyer all day, speaking of guys I covered in Tampa.
Yeah, that's Adam's boy right there.
Nation's number one fullback. definitely benefited from the coaching change. He visited Florida seemingly every weekend. We made jokes about this, like, you know, he was just so eager to be in Urban and Adazio's ear, like, hey, coach, still need that blocking fullback in the spread offense? I got you, coach. And he was there every weekend. And as it turns out, he's a good kid, and his patience paid off, not probably the way he planned it to, but through the offensive change. And I think he's a guy who's going to end up seeing the field. I mean, just as a blocker, and I don't know how great he is, you know, at that right now, because I didn't see a whole lot of him blocking in high school. But
I mean, his junior year, his coach said they had a 1,800-yard rusher,
right,
and he was the lead blocker for him that season. So it's got to say something. But
does he bench more than 500 pounds?
So yeah. So everyone's written at some point or another.
Not me.
Good man.
I only mentioned one line about that.
So, well, that's the thing, is that it's so not glamorous and it's so seemingly unimportant, but he's still the nation's number one fullback. Like, Florida reeled in a guy who's the best at his position.
I think he was a huge pickup for Urban.
Yeah.
I mean, they need a fullback in the spread. So, I think he's the most underrated player in this class.
Wow.
I mean, I've yet to see him play, but I saw him camp at Florida, and he was the strongest kid I've seen in a while. He's got great feet. He's pretty fast for a fullback.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's a great pickup. Even if Urban Meyer and Steve Adazio and that spread offense is still there, they need a fullback. Stevie Wilkes and T.J. Pridemore are always injured.
Right.
So I think
they both played defense in high school.
Yeah, and
this
he's
guy
the first
has experience at fullback,
since Ron Zook was here.
Wow.
So I think I think Hunter George is a huge pickup, and now I think he might start first day. Yeah. He's the first true. Who knows what's going to happen with Wilkes and Pridemore? They need a fullback. I think he starts first day.
And his body's physically mature enough to start at this
level. He's going to carry the ball. I think he's going to be great.
All right, who else? Let's do the offensive line, guys, because that was obviously a huge area of concern with Adazio leaving. They lost some guys. Guy who was it? Tommy Jordan was the one who was here early
and then left.
And then he signed. And that assumedly means he's coming back.
They caught him at a basketball game.
And he just wasn't having it.
It's like Jernigan. You can only talk to Jernigan if you like caught him at an event.
Yeah, exactly. But at least Jernigan would talk to you. He would talk to you for 20 minutes if he could.
Lord.
Which was always good. I'll miss that. I'll miss that about Tim Jernigan. But I won't miss him
taking plays off.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens at Florida State. But I really like Tripp Thurman. He camped at Florida, so I got to see him. Didn't make the drive to Delaware to watch his high school game, so
that was bold of you.
Not that dedicated.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's good. He was playing a lot of these Southeastern kids and holding his own. So I think that's huge. It's obviously going to take time. Offensive linemen, they need at least a year before they can be thrown into the fire. I mean, the Pounceys were they're different animals.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see that every day. So I don't think anybody should really expect these guys to contribute early.
Tripp Thurman's body is close to being where it needs to be
for an offensive lineman. Strong kid. I mean, watching him over the summer, that was pretty impressive.
Yeah.
He was knocking kids over. So Tommy Jordan, still some question marks. I talked to a couple guys at Rivals who've, you know, watched his games, and they say that he might be a little, they say, soft for the SEC. But we'll see. It's still so tough to say.
Right.
I mean, he's playing in a system that they're not used to playing guys in the SEC. They don't see the athleticism in the Southeast, and for high school football even. So it's going to take a year or two to develop, but that's what offensive linemen have to go through.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's a huge, you know, knock on him right now. But you have to wonder mentally, is he stable enough? Well, not stable, I guess, but capable enough of playing at a high-profile school like this if he couldn't survive 2 days.
Right.
And I know that he told his paper, I just wanted to come back, you know, I wanted to take it off, but
you wouldn't have come down here in the first place if that was
exactly the case. And I think that if you're an offensive lineman, the earlier you get in, the better.
Yeah.
You need that development time. So I think that's an issue already. So we'll have to see how he does once he gets in.
Only two linemen in this class, though. That can't be. I mean, that's definitely got to be considered one of the weaknesses, along with linebacker and D-line.
Especially since they had another lineman commit that decommitted in January.
Yeah, it's Notre Dame of all schools. Notre Dame got one from Florida.
Yeah. See,
he's going to play defensive end there, though.
I know, which is even weirder.
I mean,
he leaves to play offense. Well, yeah, he was
his
defensive
body's
tackle,
suited for.
But they really liked him at offensive tackle. Yeah. And every time I talk to him, he's like, oh, it's going to be so much fun to play tackle because I'm athletic now, so we'll see. It's a loss as far as bodies go, but maybe it wasn't a loss as far as skill goes.
Okay.
I don't know what Notre Dame's going to do with, like, those six defensive ends that they got.
Make them all tackles.
Yeah.
But, I think Muschamp was smart when he said that they wanted to get guys that fit their system. They didn't want to just start throwing scholarships out there. So maybe losing Hounshell wasn't a huge loss for him. But, you know, I always think that you can develop offensive linemen better than you can develop defensive linemen or linebackers. So they needed bodies. That's why they went after Jacob Fisher. They probably wouldn't have gone after him if Urban was here because, I mean, they would have had their guys. So, right. You know, they didn't really go after a lot of offensive linemen in the first place. This was a down year for it anyway, so we'll see next year. They missed for guys in Florida. So
yeah, they missed.
You got to recruit your backyard first.
Right. Well, they missed on a guy, Jordan Presswood, down at Plant City. Ended up going to FSU. A couple guys like that would have been nice pickups, but I agree. I think it's the smart move where don't throw scholarships at guys just to fill a recruiting class just because you have those numbers. Like, wait until if next year is going to be an up year for offensive linemen, just go hard after it then, especially when you can start establishing relationships and building trust with some of these people.
Yeah. Well, Zach LaBelle is a guy from Tarpon Springs. And
oh, that's right.
Committed to Georgia, and I know that he showed interest in Florida. And Muschamp said, you know, it's not what we're really looking for. Hmm. So, that would have been easy scholarship to throw out there, see what happens, and they didn't. So he knew what he was doing. He had a plan.
Interesting. All right, so let's flip to the defensive side of the ball. Let's start with the secondary, because that's sort of the one bright spot. Six defensive backs. You talk about only really all just athletes. What impact do we see these guys making? Let's talk about them individually a little bit.
Where do you want to start? Which one?
I mean, Roberson's probably the biggest one. He's probably going to see the field earlier, just because he can play both those positions. They probably need more help at safety than they do corner. But, you know, like I said, he wants to play corner first, see where it kind of goes. But once you get on that college play, I just feel like he's going to eat and lift so much that he's just going to grow into a safety. And his instincts, if you watch the Under Armour game where he had that interception, he's playing like the boundary there. He wasn't playing true corner. And it looked like, you know, he was playing free safety, waiting for that pass to come. And he's a safety. So we'll see what happens with him. Jabari Gorman, I think he's awesome.
Even Jabari Gorman.
He is. I mean, watching him in Orlando, the first time I've ever seen him play, and his instincts are just off the charts. So he's a huge hitter. He's a smart kid. He knows what to do on the football field. And he's a good talker. So that automatically I like him. That he'll pick up my phone calls and he gives good quotes.
I was just saying that way. We had him on our video show a couple weeks ago.
The first week
of the video show, and there was a great interview, I guess, from Tom and Tyler when they were down. That was at the Under Armour game, right?
That was after the
game, yeah. And asked him something about, like, so they came and visited you at your high school, right? And his response, and this is why I laugh when you said he's a great talker, his response was just, Yeah. That was his whole response to that. So yeah,
he was good once I think all the cameras were away from him. Okay, but I think he's gonna be it.
Seems like a very athletic potential. Maybe not this year. Could he play special?
I think with all these guys, special teams is where you start off. And Muschamp is like Meyer. He wants special teams to be the thing. Mm. You know, he wants all the athletes, the top players, to be there. So, you know, I think they all have a chance. But you know. Probably Purifoy and Pop Saunders.
Yeah, definitely.
Are probably the return guys of the future.
Saunders had that one ridiculous kickoff return on the Under Armour practice.
Yeah, Saunders might not be as sharp as a corner, but he's a tremendous athlete. Yeah. So.
Okay, you said Purifoy might be the best.
I think
most
he is.
Most athletic of the group.
Yeah, and I think Showers is close second. They both played running back, but you know Purifoy is just so fast. It's just ridiculous to watch him out there. So I know he got his offer after he ran like a 4.4, and no one had ever heard of him. And then Alabama and Auburn are coming after him. So
all of a sudden he's a 4-star.
Yeah, exactly. I think he's going to be in the return game at some point.
All right, let's. Who else are we forgetting in that group? Out of those defensive backs,
Chris Johnson.
Chris Johnson. A young Ahmad Black, as I like to call him.
There you go. I mean, that's
promising. Hard worker. He's a big hitter. He'll probably be a strong safety. Even though he said Major Wright was one of his favorite players, and he's like, "Yeah, because we played the same position." I was almost as hard hitter or as a free safety,
right?
But he probably doesn't have the speed that you know Major had or a free safety would have, which is why I kind of compare him to Ahmad Black. Plus his work ethic. I mean, his coach just loves him. So you know, I think he's going to be a guy that's going to contribute on special teams. He will probably be like Ahmad Black in the sense that he'll be that kickoff guy. He'll be a gunner, and then. You know, we'll see where it kind of goes. The issue that he's going to have that maybe Ahmad didn't was the depth at safety at his position because Matt Elam's there. And, you know, unless he leaves for the NFL draft early, that's his position for the next 3 years. So we'll see what kind of happens with that. Not sure if he could play nickel just because of his speed, but, you know, he'll see the field at some point. He's going to be that guy that's going to work hard.
Right. So. All right, let's move into the front seven, the most disappointing part probably, the whole recruiting class. What are the prospects looking like in that
Graham
area?
Graham Stewart, Tevin Westbrook.
You talked about Graham Stewart earlier, undersized.
Yeah, I think it's just really tough to bring in an undersized linebacker into the SEC.
Yeah.
And, you know, someone sent me an email and said he could be Brian Cushing. Well, he could also be Brendan Beal.
Right.
And, I mean, it's just that it's such a different style of football. And I know that Muschamp said that he really likes Graham Stewart, and when he was asked about losing Curtis Grant, he said, I really like Graham Stewart. That's where he just looked really small in that All-Star game.
Yeah.
So right now I don't really know what to say about that. I've never seen him in person. I've talked to people who think he's really good, but we'll see when he plays competition, you know, in the Southeast.
Right.
Yeah, last night after the Super Bowl, I caught part of the USA versus the World game's replay. I saw Graham Stewart out there. He was so much smaller than I expected.
Yeah. I mean, he's fast, though. Yeah. He can hit. I've seen that, but size is, I mean, that...
It's going to catch up to him eventually, yeah.
That's tough in the SEC, so...
And then who's the other linebacker you're talking about? Tevin Westbrook?
He's a defensive end.
Defensive end.
Yeah, don't know much about him.
Well,
he was a late addition to the class.
He's an athletic freak, though, and his coach was, you know, that's what he kept preaching. And I know they came down and they watched him play basketball, and they loved him. He's got good size. I think he's around 275 right now, maybe a little lighter, but... you know, his coach said once he gets his motor going, sky's the limit, which can be taken two ways. Does he have to be motivated, or is it, you know, when he gets into the flow of things?
Right.
So we'll just have to see. That's probably the guy that we know least about, and Graham Stewart, I guess, which is your front seven. That's,
yeah.
It's not
promising.
Yeah. No. But then they do have Clay Burton, who's probably going to play defensive end.
Forgot about Clay.
He's our only role. You can't forget about the Burtons.
Yeah,
right?
Trey Jr.
I tried to.
I'm sure if he has a work ethic of Trey, you know,
he'll,
as a guy.
Yeah, he'll see the field.
And he talked to Muschamp, and Muschamp, you know, said, I like your size, I want you to stay a defensive end, and he's already on campus, so that definitely helps him. But, you know, I really think that their front seven is where they struggled, and that's where they needed, you know, they needed pieces.
Especially because they were in it for so many of the big
games.
Yeah,
exactly. I mean, that was a huge loss with Meyer, so... And it's weird to me. I know that Muschamp loves defensive backs, and he's going to primarily coach them. But when you're a defensive coach from Texas,
right.
Auburn, LSU, you would think that the front seven would be something that they would hit on.
Right.
And they missed out on Grant, Anthony, Dawson. I think that's big. And when you lose
Rasko.
Watkins, Rasko. Well, I mean, but Rasko came in kind of late.
Yeah, but he already had a relationship with Muschamp.
Yeah, and I think that the problem that Florida had, though, was, he really liked Muschamp, but he didn't know anything about Gainesville.
Yeah.
And to be there once, it's kind of tough. But Jeremy Finch, I mean, he was a guy who committed. He never even visited.
Right.
So, but, I mean, I guess that really worked out for Florida since he broke his leg and then we never heard about him again. But, you know, they lose out on Jonathan Jenkins, who I think would have been a beast, especially if they're going to go 3-4. He's the perfect nose tackle for that.
Mount Jenkins.
Yeah, and Alkino Watson again. I mean, that's a huge loss because he's an athletic guy. He runs he runs a 4.8 40. He weighs like 270 pounds, and he's on the track team. So, I think that they lose an athletic nose tackle in that. That's where they missed the most was the front seven.
How much of these guys was McCarney leaving? Just all of it?
Well,
because you got to think Meyer's not a great defensive recruiter. I mean, he's a good recruiter, obviously, but not in bringing in defense.
It's tough though because they didn't. A lot of the defensive guys. Well, Stan Drayton recruited Alkino Watson. Jenkins came in kind of late. With recruiting, so...
McCarney leaving definitely hurt Jernigan.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, I'm not sure how much a lot of kids know about Brian Young, what they know about Dan Quinn. I think that's later for 2012, for the NFL and, all the Super Bowl rings and all that to be glamorous to him.
You have more than 2 months to flash it to kids?
Yeah, exactly. When you have more than
a month, weeks. Yeah.
I mean, they didn't have their staff until the 17th of January. So, I mean, they were behind the eight ball from the beginning, but... Still, maybe I'm just naive about it, but to have a defensive guy like that, I would just think that they would load up defensively with top guys. I mean, not top guys, but, you know, guys that they're not just throwing scholarships
exactly.
at.
Exactly. We're going to move into the second to last segment of the show here, the Sports Journalism 101, in which we educate you and you generally don't respond with feedback, which once again, I'm going to take as a good sign that you love it so much, listeners, that you're just awed by it and can't respond.
We're perfect.
Yeah.
Like we say.
More
no
or less.
News is good news.
Exactly. That's my philosophy. This time, since I got two recruiting guys in here, going to talk about the process of covering recruiting because it is unlike anything else really in the sports journalism world as far as I'm concerned. It's not like covering a beat in the traditional sense. You know, it's a lot. It's the true. It's a lot of reporting. I say I always admire.
It's a lot of enterprise work.
Exactly. And I say I admire people who can cover recruiting as a beat because it's so much reporting skill necessary and so much texting. So much texting. Ed, this is your... this is your beat for the Sun. Talk about the hardest part of covering recruiting, the easiest part, and what you enjoy. What's the tough part?
What do I enjoy about covering recruiting?
do you enjoy anything about covering recruiting?
No, it's. I'd probably say the most fun that you have with recruiting is getting to go to camps, getting to go to games where you don't have to write a gamer. You don't have to take all these crazy stats.
You're just there to watch
one
or two guys.
You're there to watch a couple guys, and you get to talk to them more casually. Then, you know, let's get into the game aspect, blah, 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 your season. And, you know, that's always fun. And it's fun to go to those combines and just see what goes into this monster that is recruiting. You know, in San Antonio and in Orlando, they have, you know, 500 juniors running around, like, doing 40s, you know, one-on-one, stuff like that. Quarterbacks, they're already rating guys are in, you know, fourth grade out there. It's crazy. they actually, after the U.S. Army All-American Bowl, they had, I think it was an eighth grade combine.
Yeah.
Oh, it was ridiculous. I don't know. Soon they're not fifth grade combines.
Great. I mean, Tim Jernigan was saying that Florida was recruiting him since he was in sixth grade.
Yeah.
When Ron Zook was here.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely mind-boggling, the beast that is recruiting now. Another thing that I really like about it is, you know, the last month gets really crazy, and then right before signing day, it's just, especially this year, because there's so many predictions out there. You know, you have to talk to so many kids, so many coaches, so many mentors. It always gets tough to say, you know, what's going to happen. I mean, I missed on a lot of kids, but it's, I mean, that's the fun part about it. You know, some of these kids, you really don't know what's going to happen. Like
right.
You said with Story, you know, after reading all the stories from it and talking to people, there's no way that anybody had the scoop on that.
Exactly.
I mean, he probably didn't even know until he signed. And
yeah.
When he was done, he probably had to look at it twice
right.
And say, which one did I just sign?
Which one Story didn't even have the scoop on it?
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. So, I mean, I don't believe anybody when they say that they had that one. The least exciting part about it is definitely the egos.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy to think that, you know, years ago, if a kid committed, no one really cared. I mean, it was just, all right, a kid committed, let's call him up, okay, quote, Story. Now it's, you know, you have to be on these guys starting, you know, 3 months ago for the 2012 class,
right.
And it's ridiculous. It's just crazy how much is put into this now. And, you know, it's funny, fans will look at it and say, who's next? Oh, Jeff Driscoll. Well, now everyone's focused on 2012. Signing day was a week ago. Not even a week ago.
Right.
And they're already focused on 2012. They're already looking at, you know, what's Kelvin Taylor going to do? And he's going to be a junior this fall. So I think that when you're dealing with these kids and they won't pick up your phone calls or they won't text you back, they won't return emails, you're 16, 17 years old.
Right.
Like, you're not making money off this
yeah.
yet. It's
you're
I
not
just,
above this.
And I think that's a huge part about it that I don't like. And, you know, I know a lot of people who don't like it. I can understand it gets frustrating. You're getting tons of phone calls and text messages every day. But if you don't want to deal with it, let's say, you know, direct it to one of your parents.
Right.
Or even say, I don't want to talk. I don't want to do this right now. I don't want to be rude or anything. But it comes off hugely negative when a kid doesn't answer, you know, doesn't text back and stuff like that.
Right.
I just think that's part of it that really ruins covering recruiting.
Right.
Not
to mention the fact that you're covering 16 and 17-year-old kids. And as we know, like, we've all been there recently. The kids are dumb, you know? Like,
yeah, I mean.
Kids are
going
to make decisions and then go back on it 2 days later because, like, they're fickle because their girlfriend
exactly.
doesn't like their college decision.
Exactly.
Like, that I can't imagine dealing with that on a regular basis and having to, like, it's the whims of teenagers, essentially, is what, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But you do learn a lot from it. I mean, you learn that you have to talk to how many sources every
right.
day. And it's, you know, you definitely develop your journalistic skills. There's a lot of reporting that goes into it. I think that the thing that, that's the easiest about recruiting is any information you put out there, fans love.
Exactly.
I mean, our website was just getting bum-rushed with anything mentioning Jeff Driscoll in the fall. Just everybody would read it. And then the Timmy Jernigan saga, everybody read it. Signing day was just ridiculously crazy. Our most viewed thing was me just putting up what time kids signed.
Wow.
And I mean, the monster and the beast that is recruiting is just out of control. And it gets fun, but it gets crazy. And, you know, when you're done with it, you know, once signing day's over, unlike this year, I guess, because, you know, the Jacoby Brissett drama. but now, since signing day is officially over, since he signed today, it's like a weight's been lifted off your shoulders.
It's over for Florida, at least.
And, well, yeah. I feel sorry for the guys who have to cover Jadeveon Clowney. But, you know, I also don't think that these kids don't have enough time. Let's be serious.
No, yeah.
I mean, these coaches are recruiting you your sophomore, junior years. You have enough time. I don't really know Jacoby Brissett personally. I've met him a few times, and I thought he was a really nice kid. But you have more than enough time to know where you're going to go. I hear all the time, oh, I don't have time to take visits. Well, stop wasting your time.
Right.
Use the weekends that you have. I know. I was talking to someone. They said that, you know, Clowney didn't have time because he's doing photo shoots. Stop taking photo right. shoots and go visit South Carolina.
It's in your backyard.
Yeah, I can't believe that, and I won't believe it. Maybe if my son has the opportunity to be recruited by, you know, big schools, maybe then I'll know. Hey, he really doesn't. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's really hard for me to believe. If kids can enroll early,
exactly,
then kids can take official visits throughout the year, right. And definitely in January.
You're gonna make your son take an official visit to Hawaii.
Oh,
I'm
gonna make my son take 5 official visits, and I'm gonna make him talk to the media. Yeah, he's gonna talk to the media because it's, you know, the internet guys. I'm not gonna say they have it easy, but they have it a lot better. I mean, you say Rivals, ESPN, Scout, they know exactly what that is.
Exactly.
Newspapers, it's tough for him, and maybe it wasn't as tough back in the day. So I'm making him. He's got to do his interviews.
Right. All right. That's fair. Tom, you're sort of recently thrown into the whole recruiting business. What was the hardest adjustment for you, and what was the sort of the most rewarding, gratifying part of it?
The hardest thing, sometimes just getting a hold of these kids. Like I said, a lot of them, like, they won't return your calls, they won't return your texts. But the most gratifying part was probably when I finally did get a hold of some of these kids. Like, it's just, like, yeah, gratifying.
Right.
It's like, okay, yes, finally got the source. It's not like a traditional beat where you have media opportunities such and such days.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're out there trying to find people that'll talk to you about this kid. And that's really rewarding. Another thing I liked, I mean, I didn't get to go to as many camps as I did because, you know, I got into it at the end of summer. I got to go to Friday Night Lights, got to go to Under Armour practices and stuff, see that. And that was fun, too, you know, just seeing these kids out there compete against each other like that. And I also liked, because you don't get to see these kids unless you go see them.
Right.
And I liked...
They're certainly not coming to you.
Yeah. I liked, you know, taking a couple Fridays out, you know, going to see some of these kids play just to see what are they all about, and then get to talk to them afterwards. You know, when I went to go see these kids, there was only maybe me and one or two other people there talking to them.
Right.
So it was refreshing, you know, not having just like a swarm of media, except at the Jacoby Brissett thing.
Right.
There are like 20 people trying to talk to him.
Yeah, well, that's what he gets for setting himself apart, you know?
Yeah. I didn't have enough time.
Right.
Yes, you did.
Yeah, I'm not going to feel bad for Jacoby Brissett being surrounded by media because he took out his own high school basketball game and rose, you know, put himself above everybody else.
But he wanted to get his teammates involved.
By singling himself out.
Did they all have, like, UF stuff?
No.
Oh, so they weren't involved.
No, absolutely not.
He said he just wanted to share the moment with them because basketball was, like, his first love.
He wanted to raise himself above his teammates in the moment.
Did they win? Did they beat Jupiter?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was, like, 82 to 49 or something like that.
The fact that you know the score.
Well, really? Damn fine reporting, Tom. Wow. Damn fine.
I'd write a featureized gamer on it for sports reporting.
Nice.
All right, we're going to wrap up the show here with our weekly awards, our Major Right Awards for Excellence in the Field of Sport, and Wandy Pierre-Louis Bad Angles of the Week. since I thoroughly believe in ending on a bad note, we're going to start with the positives, and we'll start with Ed in your major.
Definitely Aaron Rodgers, MVP, 3 touchdowns, more than 300 yards, and an awesome Mr. Rodgers Neighborhood shirt that I wore for the game. That I bought from a Wisconsin store.
Nice.
Plus, the girlfriend is a Packers fan, and they won, so...
Everybody's happy.
Yeah. And when the girlfriend's happy, that's always good. Plus, I really like how Aaron Rodgers is kind of like a hippie.
Yeah.
And he's really weird. Yeah, right. And he does the belt thing.
He does
thing.
The weird belt thing. And, it's
and
a
he
big,
even
it's
had awesome. A belt after the game.
Yeah,
right.
Aaron Rodgers is so cool. And we don't have to hear about Brett Favre anymore.
I was going to say.
Oh, my gosh.
The whole thing
Thank
is a big
you,
F
Aaron
you to Favre.
Rodgers.
Except ESPN was still talking about Brett Favre this morning.
But mm-hmm. it'll start to die down.
I agree.
One can only hope.
All right, I'm going to give my major to something that happened this morning. I got a text from Greg, our basketball writer. You can hear him on this podcast in the past. That he got recognized in class for his appearance on the Alligator Sports video show.
Sweet.
The Alligator Sports video show is not exactly lighting the world on fire in terms of viewers. However, apparently somebody, some random girl, a girl no less.
Nice.
Yeah. Good for Greg. In his class, called him out and was like, hey, you're that guy from the video show, right? And I had no idea how he responded. Probably very poorly. But yeah, I mean, that's very cool to me because we spent a lot of time on that and seeing somebody actually react and recognize some one of us on campus is very cool. So my major goes to that girl, whoever she was.
Maybe she listens to the podcast too. Maybe we'll get some feedback this
Great.
Week.
Great.
I've never even seen that show.
Get an email. That's fair. Oh.
I didn't know about it though. Right. I probably would have watched it.
We got a special guest intro this week.
ESPN's Reese Davis.
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's very
when,
cool.
When is it?
It's already
it's online right
came
now.
Came online last night.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Maybe you looked at my tweets.
Yeah.
If you're not, what time did you send it?
I posted it before I came over here this morning.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Tom, major?
I actually remembered who I was going to give my major to, but Ed kind of stole it.
That's fair.
But I'm still going to give it to partly to a Packer because Greg Jennings put the team on his back last night with 2 touchdowns.
That's fair.
But more importantly, Jacoby Brissett for ending recruiting my time on the recruiting beat. I'm glad to be getting back to a traditional beat and start off with baseball now. So, Jacoby Brissett, you get a major, even though you're not on campus yet.
You could get him a Wandy for prolonging your time on the beat. That could really go either way.
Could, but I did get to knock out the featurized gamer for sports reporting, so I didn't have to do that on like gymnastics or something.
That's
so.
Fair.
Right. Did you just take a shot at gymnastics?
No, I enjoyed covering gymnastics.
Ron Farian is going to have beef with you, Tom.
I enjoyed covering gymnastics. I wrote my first gamer for sports reporting on gymnastics, but I just wanted to switch it up.
Ed, your Wandy?
Oh, my Wandy. Saturday night, second row seating for me at the basketball game. You know, I like Fred. I know that Fred's had issues with young writers. I know. I hear about it all the time.
Who?
I know that, you know, Alligator writers don't get a lot of respect from him. But he's never been rude to me.
No, yeah.
I've never had any problems with him until Saturday when I got bumped for Kentucky media to sit in the second row. And I know Fred even said, hey, we have guys who sit there all the time. Yeah, but they don't write that night. They don't have deadline.
And for a 9 p.m. game.
Yeah, exactly. For one of the biggest games of the year. For a record crowd at the O-Dome. And to be a local media guy and to be put in the second row where you're cramped and I don't even have an outlet to plug in my computer, to write on deadline, mm-hmm. to have cat paws and some guy in a bow tie having a better seat. I just thought that's just not right.
No, yeah.
And, you know, for him to say we were full media. So, I mean, so why wasn't some guy that was covering Kentucky sitting up there?
Right.
It didn't make sense to me. And, you know, we had a very short confrontation about it. And I probably won't expect to talk to him ever again about it. I hope he listens to this, but
he won't.
He probably won't.
But if makes you
But it's only getting out there. I did have some positive feedback on Twitter, about it. So.
Good. Because usually when we complain about stuff, we just get called whiny brats. And
he told me to stop complaining on Twitter.
Really?
And then when he came up to me, he was like, "Come on, no one complains about it." And I was like, "It doesn't make sense, Fred." And then
right. That
was pretty much the extent of our conversation about it.
If it makes you feel any better, the Alligators' photographer credential requests for that game were denied.
Nice.
Yeah.
And Chang had to sit
Chang
by himself.
He had to stand by himself for a while, and then he actually ended up sitting in the second half next to Reese Davis and Hubert.
Ah, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that actually worked out pretty well for him. But
nice.
Again, it's a situation where if he had to write, it would have been a pretty big problem. Because
how
do you, you know, no plug, no outlet, have to put your laptop literally on your lap?
Like, yes.
So,
it was
very
uncomfortable.
That's rough.
Hey, but I met deadline. Because I'm awesome.
Yeah, because you do what you do.
Yeah.
I'm going to give my Wandy a little more recently to Black Eyed Peas for their quote-unquote performance at the Super Bowl halftime show.
Oh,
I'm coming in biased. I hate the Black Eyed Peas. I hate everything they stand for. I think it's the lowest common denominator of music for dumb people.
Don't tell that to Rolling Stone.
Yeah, apparently.
Wow.
Unbelievable. But and then they come out, and it's like, you know what? terrible. You can't sing. Don't even try. You all are pretty talented dancers, or at least very well choreographed. They don't do that. Slash comes out, and Fergie just craps all over Sweet Child of Mine by trying to sing it.
I was insulted by that.
It was miserable. It was a very pretty light show, but I was just roaring around the office angry about the fact that the Black Eyed Peas were ruining what was otherwise a very, very, very good Super Bowl with just terrible, terrible music.
And they screwed up everybody's prop bet.
Yeah.
I got a feeling is what everybody started with.
Yeah.
That's what I had the first song. And the last song, I said the time. And they went with the time, and then they went back into I Got a Feeling.
Right.
That just inappropriate.
Great.
Plus, they had to have Usher and Slash come out to make them look better.
Right.
And what was Will.i.am doing when Usher was dancing?
I don't know.
What's Will.i.am ever doing?
That's a very good point.
It was really bad.
I had it on Let's Get It Started to start, and I Got a Feeling at the end. I feel like they've started every performance ever with Let's Get It Started since, like, 2004, whenever that song came out. I figured it was a lock, but not so much.
I actually do have to give a shout-out to Richard Kane. He'll never listen to this. And I'm sure anybody who listens to this won't have any idea who he is. But he picked Where's the Love to be the last song, and it was almost the last song. And we were all like, why would they play that?
That song's like 10 years old.
That was on Elefunk, man. Like, no one's going to... And they played it. And we were all like, wow.
Yeah.
He had a celebration dance and everything, and then they went into the time. Pretty much killed it for him.
Oh, that's rough. All right, Tom, close this thing out.
My Wandy, also Super Bowl related, goes out to Christina Aguilera for botching the national anthem. God. I don't know how anybody botches the national anthem.
Agreed.
It's burned into your head since elementary school.
It's our nation's anthem, damn it. Like,
yeah. It's inexcusable.
But did you notice it when it happened or afterward?
We were actually at Adam's house. They're having a Super Bowl party. Me and one other person were the only person that noticed it. As soon as it happened, we're like, she just messed that up, didn't she? She just said a line she already said and skipped a line.
Oh, I didn't realize she said a line she already said. I honestly didn't really catch the whole thing. I didn't realize she said a line she already
said. Like she started out the line and then ended it on...
Yeah. God. But I remember hearing it, and I was too busy focusing on her going over 145.
Yeah.
But I noticed, I was like, wait a second.
She went like
where's
155,
Ramparts?
Right?
Yeah, something like
where's
that.
Where's Ramparts?
I was like, but I just kept going. I was focused on the clock.
Right.
And then I listened to it again. I was like, oh my gosh. Where's Mo Cheeks?
Right.
Where's Mo Cheeks?
Mo Cheeks, Mike Tomlin should have stepped out and brought it home for her. But that's all we got for this show. You can send any feedback to us, as I said earlier, podcast@alligator.org. You can find us on Twitter @AlligatorSports, Adam D. Berry, Tomas_Verde. Ed, where can they find you?
Ed Ashoff, G-Son. ASCHOFF.
Double F, G-Son.
Yeah.
And they can find your blog once again at...
recruits.gatorsports.com.
All right, check us out at alligatorsports.org. Also, watch our video show. Ed's going to be doing it.
I'm going to do it right when I get back to the office.
All right, we'll be back next week. Thanks for listening.